Discover insights to boost your business or improve your quality of life right here on the Soar to Success podcast with your host, Pat Altvader.
I am so excited to introduce you to our featured expert this month, Dori Clark. She's a marketing strategy consultant, professional speaker, and frequent contributor to the Harvard Business Review. She's a professor at Duke University School of Business and the author of Entrepreneurial You, Reinventing You, and Stand Out. Welcome to the podcast, Dori.
Thank you, Pat. Great to talk with you.
I'm so honored to have you as a guest on the Sort of Success podcast. So let's just jump right in. Why don't you tell our audience what you do and then, more importantly, why? The why you do it.
Well, the work that I do really centers around helping individual professionals and companies figure out how to get their message heard in an increasingly loud and crowded and noisy environment. And so part of that is figuring out your unique position in the marketplace. And part of it is really developing a strategy to make sure that it breaks through amidst the sea of competition. And so I do that in a lot of different ways, whether it's executive coaching or writing books or giving talks or teaching executive education.
So how did you get started speaking and writing?
Well, a lot of this was because I really needed to figure out these issues for myself. I started my business in 2006, and I very quickly discovered that there were so many people doing what I was doing, you know, which is basically marketing, consulting. And so if I was going to be successful, I somehow needed to solve these problems. And so I gave myself the task of trying to crack the code on it. So I had been a journalist early in my career. And so that was really the tack that I took in a lot of ways. It's if you want to know something, go out, see people who have done it, interview them, study them, learn from them, and figure out what the common denominator is so that you can do it. And by extension, I wanted to help other people figure out how to do it as well, which is what I've striven to do in my books, because it's always a source of great frustration for me to see a lot of talented people who have good ideas, who have something to contribute, but they are stymied because they don't understand how to get known by the media or get known by their ideal clients. And I wanted to help unmask that process a little bit.
Yes, I love your three keys that you developed. So can you explain those components and a little bit about what they're each about?
Certainly. So what I came to understand in the process of really studying how people become recognized experts in their field is that there are three key elements that you have to work on. The first is content creation, because if you're going to be known for your ideas, you need to share your ideas. People need to know what they are. That's right. It seems very, very self-evident. And yet a lot of people don't do it. And then they're frustrated. Yeah. So you got to give people a way to actually see what it is you're thinking. Yeah. The next is social proof, which is basically a term from psychology for your credibility in the marketplace. Mm-hmm. What are the signals that you are sending to show people that in this crowded environment, they should be listening to you? Mm-hmm. Why are you worth studying? Because no one is going to take the time to look at every single option in depth. You cannot count on that because people are too busy. And so you need to be able to flash some signals to show them, oh, okay, this woman is actually worth paying attention to. And typically that involves finding a way to affiliate with brands that are known and trusted by the audience already, whether that is publications that you write for, whether that is clients that you've worked with in the past, whether it is alumni associations or professional associations that you're a leader of, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And then the final piece, of course, is your network, because you can't do these things alone. You can't really, I mean, you might be creating great content, but if you're in a cave, no one's going to hear about it.
Right. Right. Yeah. Well, I think those are so important, and it's really an interesting way to look at it. How did you come up with those? Was that through your research for one of the books?
Yes. In the course of writing my book, Standout, I interviewed over 50 people who were experts in their own respective fields, many of them in the business world, but pretty diverse. I interviewed scientists. I interviewed real estate people. I interviewed urban planners to try to get a sense of what they were doing. And this is what I realized, is that there are these three parts. And that's why it is not so easy. You know, if becoming a recognized expert were one thing, if it was just you do one thing, then a lot more people would do it, because it would be very clear what to do, and people would just, you know, I mean, not everyone, of course, but many people would say, oh, okay, well, I know what to do, so I will go ahead and do it. Mm-hmm. But part of the challenge here is, A, even knowing the three things to do, but a second part, which I have found in a number of my executive coaching clients, is that for many people, there is an inherent comfort level with one or possibly with two of the categories. Mm-hmm. And so they just keep doing those things because they feel comfortable. And it's not a waste of time. You know, it's not like they're playing video games. They actually are good things to do. The problem, though, is that it's like being a musician who's, you know, a great musician, but all they ever do is write more songs, and then they wonder, well, gosh, why is no one ever hearing my songs? And it's like, you know what? Because you're writing them in your bedroom. You're not marketing. You have to do the other piece.
You have to do a YouTube video.
Exactly. And so what I realized is really critically important, which people miss, is that you have to be willing to make the effort on all three fronts, on content, on social proof, on your network. If you just pick your favorite and keep doing that, it's going to lead to frustration. You're going to wonder why you're not getting the results you want.
Yes, and I noticed with people that I'm connected with, either my clients or just in other professional groups, that people might start out and they're, oh, I'm so excited, I'm going to write content on this. This is what I'm going to do. And they start doing it, and they're doing it, but they're not getting the attention they want. And then they're slogging along pretty soon. And something else comes along, something shiny and bright, and they're like, yes, that's going to be it. So my question to you is, how do they know when they're on the right track and they should just keep going and going versus it's that shiny object that's giving them the momentary excitement, but not really going to lead to a fulfilling career?
Right, exactly. Well, I think the first principle that's important is that everything takes much longer than we think that
it will. It doesn't happen overnight.
So we have to sort of prepare our expectations. So I would say step one is interrogate how the decision was made. So for instance, if you are hearing from multiple sources that a particular marketing activity is a good one, you know, it's not just like one random, you know, taxi cab driver is like, oh, the hot thing is, you know, blah, blah, blah. You know, but if you're hearing from multiple people that a particular marketing channel is the right thing to do, and they are people that you respect, and they are people who have done it themselves, then you should theoretically have a pretty high degree of confidence in what they are telling you. And I think it's very important for people also on the front end to ask, well, how long did it take to get these results? So you have a sense of it. Because what I have found is that while people definitely intellectually understand that things don't happen overnight, they know that one blog post is not going to make them a millionaire, but somehow they think not overnight means maybe 10 posts make them a millionaire. And that's not quite right either. What I counsel people in the Recognized Expert course is that it usually takes between 2 and 3 years of pursuing an activity very aggressively before you start to see almost any results. But the trick is, by that point, you've built up enough momentum. 2 or 3 years, you're definitely starting to see some results. And by the time you get to 5 years, you're actually really starting to see substantial benefits from it, because you have separated out a big gap between yourself and the other people who have given up along the way. But most people never make it that far.
So tell me the facts about podcasting.
Yeah, absolutely. So there was an interesting study that was done about podcasts. It was a 10-year longitudinal study of podcasts between 2005 and 2015. And what it showed was that while, you know, there's an enormous number of podcasts, as we all know. I mean, there's even more now. But at the time, there were hundreds of thousands of podcasts. And so it might seem like an insurmountable number, you know, oh, why would I ever do that? There's so much competition. But what they also discovered is that the average podcast lasted only 6 months and 12 episodes.
Yeah.
So meaning, you know, for 6 months, you know, twice a month, people did a podcast and then they quit.
That
was the average. And so if you look at that, literally, if you can get past 12 episodes, you are already so far ahead of the competition. You know, people think they're competing against hundreds of thousands of people. They are not. Yeah. They are competing against a much, much smaller number if they persist.
Yeah. I think that's so fascinating because that is so typical about the whole thing, that entrepreneurs stop right before they really break through. If someone chooses to do this and then they stick to their content, writing their blogs or whatever, they have to also be working on those other two aspects or they still won't be anywhere, right?
Right. Although there are some activities that can kill multiple birds with one stone, which I'm, of course, a fan of, right? We only have so many hours in the day. But so, for instance, my version of this was that for a number of years, I would say very, very heavily between about 2011 and 2015, thereabouts, I really focused on blogging for high-profile publications. And so specifically, I was writing for Harvard Business Review, which I continue to do, and I was also at the time writing for Forbes, which I stopped doing in 2015. But I was doing it a lot. I was doing between 5 and 10 posts a month, a minimum of 5, sometimes up to 10. And the reason that this, I felt, was a good use of my time, and I still believe that, is that it actually hit all three categories.
Yeah.
I was certainly creating content by blogging. Yeah. I was creating social proof because I was blogging for a publication that people had heard of, and almost all of my pieces were interviews, which enabled me to use it as a lever for networking.
Mm-hmm.
So that one activity had triple the benefits.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right. So people have to be really strategic about what they're doing and not just, well, I'm going to write some blog posts.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's a million ways to crack the code. The way that I did it, you know, doesn't need to be people's exact template. But yes, thinking about how you are going to be allocating your time. And also, you know, each of us has a sort of unique code with all of this in terms of where we're already strong and where we're weaker. So, you know, you, Pat, may have taken my recognized expert evaluation self-assessment, which people can get for free at doryclark.com/toolkit.
Okay.
And it is a scored self-assessment that actually helps you figure out, you know, what's your number? Like, are you really good on content, but you're really bad on networking or vice versa? And that way you can begin to say, you know what, for the next year, I really need to over-index on networking. That's where I need to be focusing. And when you do that, there's the perennial debate in business life about, well, do you play to your strengths or do you, you know, fix your weaknesses? And, you know, in general, yes, it's good to play to your strengths, but in terms of becoming a recognized expert, this is an area where I say studies seem very clear that you are held back by the area where you are weakest.
Mm-hmm.
If you are great on the other things, but you have no network, that it's not to say you will never get recognized, but it is going to be infinitely harder. That will hold you back. And so you should try to at least get your weakest area to average.
Yeah.
And if you can do that, great. Then after that, play to your strengths. But you can't have an area where you are terrible. That just does not work.
Yeah, so there's a lot of people now talking about creating online courses. They think, oh, this is the new hot thing. I have to have an online course. And then most of them fail at that. And so which component are they missing? Are they just not there at all? Or is it their network isn't strong enough to support it? What do you think?
Yeah, good question. I mean, some of them are not there at all. but I think when it comes to online courses, the most important point, and this is something that I talk about quite a bit, I have a whole chapter on it in my book, Entrepreneurial You, is that many people use a kind of old school frame for thinking about creating an online course, which is, oh, I have a great idea. I'm going to make this great idea. And then the world will just understand and intuit that it's great. And then they will therefore buy it.
Yeah.
And you know, that is the build it and they will come mentality.
Yeah.
And what we have seen in the rest of the business world, and it is my hope that that entrepreneurs and online course creators let this sink in, because it's really, really important in terms of avoiding a lot of heartache and wasted time and whatever, is that build it and they will come might work every once in a while. That is more rare than not. Yeah. What works far more effectively is that first you build an audience, and then the audience will actually tell you what they want. And when the audience has told you what they want and you then build that thing, then they will snap it up because they already want it. They don't have to be convinced that they want it. And so I think that the recognized expert pieces, the components of content and social proof and network, those are all things that are kind of prerequisites in some ways, because, okay, content speaks to, have people heard about you? Have they heard your name? Have they seen your stuff? Social proof is, well, you know, do you seem like a credible person? Nobody's going to buy a course from somebody where it's like, yeah, does she really know about that? And then your network is, they're the people who can become your affiliate partners and help you sell it. They're the people who can provide early testimonials about it. They're the people who can, if they're relatively well known in their field, they might do like a special bonus webinar or a bonus interview with you and give you that extra luster. These are all really important. And you use those things to build a list and to build an audience that enables you to have a group of people to whom you can sell once it is time to turn on that spigot.
Yes. So once you have a list of 200 people and you go, oh, I heard I should have an online course to build my list.
No, right?
You know, I won't say no in the sense that if it is a really passionate and specialized list of 200 people, you never know. I mean, if it's 200 people who like, you know, they're just, you know, oh, it's 200 people who like whatever, they like puppies. Okay, well, you know, that's a little broad, that's a little hard. But if you have a list, let's play it out. If you have a list of 200 people that are NASA scientists, and you are a scientist that has developed some important new technique, and it's something that if they master this technique, they are going to get promoted in their field, and they are going to be able to save their company millions of dollars because they will be able to be so much more efficient because they know about the latest polymer technology, you know, then amazing. Teach an online course about that. People pay a lot of money for that. But so a small list is actually not a problem as long as you have a very specialized offer that is easily perceived to be high in value.
Yeah.
But if you have a list of 200 people and you're like, hey, I made this new chew toy for your dog and it sells for $4.99 and there's 1,000 other chew toys. Well, you know, why would I do that? Typically, like if we're giving a rule of thumb, a list of 1,000 is probably a better starting place. A list of 10,000 is an even better starting point, because if it's high dollar, you know, there's small numbers converting, you know, people in their heads are like, oh, half my list will buy it. No, probably 1% maybe will buy it. Got to think of it that way. But yeah, if it's a small list is not an obstacle if it's a high value offering and it's highly targeted.
Okay, great. Thanks. So what is your big vision for your business?
Well, there's a number of things. One place that I would like my business to go, I mean, in a broad sense, in terms of like the mission level, what I care about doing is providing information to help other people be successful in terms of getting better known, getting their ideas out there, being able, as I talked about in my book, Entrepreneurial You, to build a viable business so that they can make a lot of money and be able to keep on doing what they care about and what they would like to do. So that's exciting for me to be helpful to other people and provide them with the tools to know how to do that. In terms of my my own business, I certainly am doing more with online courses. And one of my goals for myself over the next 18 months or so is that I am working toward reaching a place where ideally about 50% of my income, my annual revenue, is going to come from passive income sources, such as online course sales. So that's a sort of business goal that I'm working toward. And then in terms of a life goal, I have also in the past 3 years started working toward developing a side interest and expertise in writing musical theater. And so I've been, I started investing in Broadway, and I've started taking a program to be a musical theater lyricist. And so I'm working on that as well.
Wow, that
sounds like fun. How do you have time to work on that?
You know, you make, you know, everybody does it, right? You make time for what your priorities are.
Yeah.
And so this is a 2-year program that I'm part of. It's run by BMI, the music publishing company. And so this year, your first year, they meet every Monday night during the academic year. Mm-hmm. And next year, it'll be every Tuesday night. And so sometimes there's it's very inconvenient. You know, I have a business where I travel a lot.
I'm in Russia this Monday, sorry.
Yeah, actually, I missed one recently because I was in Russia. But oftentimes, I mean, you can only miss so many of these, right, before you get in trouble or they want to boot you out. So there have been times that I have flown back specifically to go to class, and I'll leave the next day, the next morning, which is not ideal at all, but you make the sort of broader sacrifice to be able to do that.
So what did you want to do when you were a little girl?
Well, when I was really little, I wanted to be a spy. I really liked James Bond. and then later, I guess this is sort of the opposite of a spy, but then I was like, I'll be a lawyer.
Then how'd you land on journalism?
I landed on journalism. Actually, that was kind of journalism is great, but it was a little bit of a second choice, because once I got to college, the thing that I decided I wanted to do was to be a professor. And so I got into a master's program after I finished undergrad and finished my master's degree, applied to doctoral programs because I thought, okay, I'll go ahead, I'll be a professor. And then I didn't get into any of them. And so I had to very rapidly reconfigure and think, okay, what other jobs allow you to read and write a lot?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll be a journalist.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. So those same doctoral programs are probably calling you up right now to have you come and speak to their students. So why don't you go ahead and tell us how people can reach you and remind us again about the free assessment.
Oh, thank you, Pat. Yes. So the recognized expert self-assessment toolkit folks can get for free. And again, that is the scored assessment that helps you figure out where you are on the path to expertise with regard specifically to creating content, to social proof, and to building your network, and helps you figure out where you should be spending your time. And folks can get that for free at doreyclark.com, doreyclark.com/toolkit.
Okay, perfect. And they need to subscribe to your newsletter too. Is that something they can do also at doreyclark.com?
Yes, thank you for the plug. I'm glad you like my newsletter. Yes, if they sign up for the toolkit, they will get the newsletter. And I try to keep it as wildly entertaining as possible. But yeah, if people want to check out my stuff, doreyclark.com is the repository. I have more than 400 free articles on the site that I've written for places like Forbes and the Harvard Business Review. So they can dive into the archives.
I love something that I noticed in your newsletter recently that was about how to introduce yourself and include your social proof as part of that introduction. Can you explain that?
So when you introduce yourself to someone, whether it is in person or certainly through a bio, it's important to mention social proof, but not in an obnoxious way, not that you're hitting people over the head with it. Oh, I did this and I did this and I did that. You want to find a way as quickly as possible to telegraph to people that you are worth listening to. And if you just say, I'm a consultant, which is what I did for a long time, that can mean any number of things. That can mean that you have just lost your job and you're unemployed and you have no idea what to do with your life. Or it could mean that you make $1 million a year and you advise CEOs and you are an extraordinarily powerful and accomplished person. And they have no way of telling the difference. Now, if they dug into you, if they Googled you, if they talked to your friends, if they talked to your clients, if they spent, you know, 15 or 30 minutes or 60 minutes analyzing, they could probably figure it out. But people are not going to spend that time. And so if you are able, in a quick and subtle way, to just, you know, it's like flashing a badge. It's just saying, okay, you know, yes, I'm good at what I do. I'm successful at what I do. And so therefore, for instance, if you write for high profile publications, it's worth mentioning that because it will give people an anchor to show that you have been vetted by a brand that they already trust. It means something different to say, hi, I'm Dori Clark. I'm a consultant and I write for the Harvard Business Review, because then they say, oh, well, if she's good enough for them, she's probably good enough for me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's excellent advice. So one thing that I always ask everybody on the Sort of Success podcast is, what are three traits that when you see those in a person, you know right away that they're going to quickly grasp the three keys to becoming a recognized expert, and they're going to be able to soar to success. So what are those three traits, in your opinion?
All right. Well, so three traits that I think are really important. The first is a lack of defensiveness. not that people, you know, if you're you know, being criticized that somebody should just take it or whatever. But I mean, just to give you an example, literally from last night, there was a woman who was asking for my advice about how to build her business. So I was glad to offer the advice. I mean, you know, it was solicited advice, and she just kept objecting to what I said. You know, oh, but that seems hard, or oh, but do I really have to do that? Or oh, isn't there a faster way? And the answer is no, there's not a faster way. Otherwise more people would do it. And so I you know, just people who sort of ask for your advice and then they don't want to hear it, is a sign that they're probably not going to be that successful, because essentially what that's telegraphing is no, they already know the answers, or at least they might not know the answers, but they know what's not the answer, and whatever you're telling them, that's not the answer.
So that's interesting.
So what would number two be?
Well, number two, I think, would be a lack of entitlement. I think that people who really are willing to work hard understand that they're not owed anything, mm-hmm. and that they need to put in the time and the effort, that they need to earn things. And I think about it on, you know, like when you meet somebody for a date, right? Mm-hmm. And it's just interesting to see the little tiny signs, right? And it's not that somebody on a date needs to pay for the date. And it's not even that it has to go Dutch. I'm happy to pay for a date, but I like someone to be willing to offer to split it or something like that. Because for somebody to come in and just assume, well, obviously someone's going to take me out. Well, you know what? Wouldn't it be nice if that was how the world was? But that's not how the world is for me. And for the people who are successful, they don't assume that the world is magically going to buy them the drink, or the world's magically going to buy them dinner. They understand that if somebody buys them the drink or the dinner, that's a nice thing. That's a thing where you say, thank you. That's wonderful. I appreciate that. That didn't have to happen. And the fact that it did, that's a great thing.
Yeah.
So I, you know, and so let's transfer that to the business world. You have to be willing to do the work and to understand that just because you know somebody doesn't mean that they're going to buy from you. Just because you had the conversation doesn't mean that this thing's magically going to happen. You need to do the work to get it to happen.
Excellent. Good. And what about number three? I can't wait to hear.
Yeah. So number three, I think if we're talking about signs that somebody is going to be really successful, I would say it's a sense of empathy or understanding the other person's position, whether that means empathy toward your customer so that you really understand what they want, or empathy toward whomever. Because sometimes people, especially in the course of networking, will will do things that are actually kind of inappropriate. Like they'll put other people on the spot, or they'll make requests that are really like outrageous requests. And they seem to think like, well, that's what you do in networking, or, you know, oh, it, you know, it doesn't hurt to ask. And it's like, well, actually sometimes it does, because you wouldn't want someone to do that to you.
Yeah.
And so having a sense of empathy about, you know, here's how a person should be in this situation, I think that's important.
And not asking to pick your brain, right?
That's right.
Those are three really great ones. Thanks so much, Dori, for being with me today. It's just been a delight hearing from you and getting all these wonderful insights. I know that my listeners and the readers of Soar to Success magazine are just going to
Thanks
love
Thanks for listening to the Soar to Success
Thanks
podcast.
So
for
Thank
more
you
insights
so much for
into growing your business
Great
or improving your
you.
Quality
Thanks.
Of life,
Bye-bye.
Visit soartosuccessmagazine.com and subscribe to the Soar to Success podcast on iTunes.